For those of us who grew up Christian or in Catholic faiths and are familiar with the Christian liturgical calendar, today is Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter, and the beginning of Jesus' journey through the worst trials and tribulations one can possibly imagine. This week marks what is known as the Passion of Christ. In many communities, including Unitarian Universalist communities, there will be waving of palms this morning as a form of celebration, marking the day when Jesus joyously entered Jerusalem. But here at First Parish, there will be no palm waving. There will be no stories of Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a colt. For us this morning, I invite you into the Jesus story as an allegory for human life, any human life. The metaphorical Jesus represents a very specific Jungian archetype. Christ is a cultural image depicting the power of our own highest possibilities. It is the outreach to us of collective human love. Christ is not the only historical figure with these associations. Krishna and Shiva in the Indian culture, Muhammad in Islamic culture, Quetzalcoatl in the South American culture have the same sort of power. Some aspects of the Buddha are approached for redemption, and there are many savior heroes from other cultures, such as Anasi in Africa, or Osiris in Egypt, Hercules in Greece. These stories that we have learned about, many of these savior heroes have provided us with an exemplar to follow, to help us to see a righteous path. The stories help us to envision our lives, our hero's journey, if you will. This morning, I'll be sharing my thoughts about identity and how events in our lives change us, how they break us, how they heal us, and how they change our sense of self and who, what we are willing to project out into the world for all to see. Throughout life, there are many who mindfully cultivate and nurture their identity and the persona that they project. Marjorie, minister. What are your expectations, your assumptions? Identity exists in two or more ways. First, there is an identity that is foisted upon us at birth, which is based on societal norms. You're a boy. You're a girl. You're this or that race. You are born to this socioeconomic class and region. Thus, you should look and act such. If you fit, then you're welcomed. You're accepted. If you do not, then you are an outsider. Privileges are given to those who are willing to fit. Those who reside outside of these societal norms are considered to be anomalies, freaks, queers. The second aspect of identity are the constructs and attributes that we claim for ourselves, such as Unitarian Universalist, middle class, Ivy League educated, cisgendered, and so on. For those of you who do not know cisgendered, it is a term for people whose gender identity matches the sex that they were assigned at birth, cisgendered. Where one's identity gets complicated is when others or society places attributes and norms onto us that we do not claim for ourselves, especially when these attributes do not resonate with who we want to define ourselves to be. Let's turn back to Jesus for a second. Imagine, here's a young man who is an itinerant Jewish rabbi, spreading a teaching, which was fairly radical for his time. God is a loving God, a father of sorts, Abba. This was very unusual. And if you think about it, it's very universalistic in theology. God is a loving God. Jesus called for acceptance of all, and I mean all, with love and peace as his theological cornerstones. He stepped across societal boundaries that made him unpopular with leaders in Jerusalem and beyond. Here is the part that is astounding. Jesus was branded a heretic by some, and the Messiah by others. Neither designation did he actually claim for himself. He called himself the Son of Man, not the Son of God. It was recorded that he would refute the calls for him to be the Messiah with the response, "That is what you or they call me." Identity is a very personal expression of one's essence, of our very being, of our soul, if you will. What makes one a conscious, enlightened, awake, and aware being is our ability to know thyself and to suspend judgment of that self and of others. We are each amazingly complicated, constantly evolving puzzles. Our inner workings, more than not, are really a mystery to ourselves, not alone to one another. If we take a moment and really search our minds and hearts, we can catch glimpses of just how mysterious we really are. I personally feel that I am complicated, especially when I am of two minds about any given topic. Anybody experience that? They sort of feel one way, but maybe they feel another way too. It's like so difficult when you're in that place. And for me, I yearn to get clarity. I review the data, because that's my scientific side, the facts. I struggle with the information, how I feel, why I feel, my intuition about the subject, and I rarely come to a snap judgment. This is on a good day, or in a good moment. I don't want to give the whole day away. What I've realized is when I operate from a place of fear or a place of hurt and pain, all bets are off. In those difficult moments, my cerebral cortex all but shuts down, and I go into this defensive mode. Anybody know that feeling? Yeah. Flight or fight. Love it. I'm not alone. This is our humankind's cross to bear. It is in this place of fight or flight, which I consider to be a point of what is called a trigger. Triggers are based on millennia of human conditioning that we inherit and a lifetime of human experience. It's very difficult not to get triggered. It happens instantaneously by what might one consider to be an old hurt, a challenge, or a threat. The telltale sign when one has been triggered is when we react fairly intensely and quickly without a lot of forethought. It's like, boom, there we are. These moments when we are triggered, if we're able to remain mindful, which is very difficult to do, are some of the most insightful clues into our inner workings. They reveal our prejudices, our fears, our understanding about self and the world. Our triggers, and we all have them, reveal truths about ourselves. For example, Jesus was triggered in the temple when he started throwing a tantrum about the moneylenders. He lost it, overturning the stalls and such. Even the persona of Jesus was susceptible to such outbursts of frustration, disappointment, and rage. No one is perfect. If one is able to cultivate that ability to be observant instead of reactive, take a moment to consider what we are truly facing or feeling, and endeavor to suspend judgment long enough to ask one question. Is what I am feeling a real threat or a perceived threat? The word real is key. If we take this moment, we may have a chance to gain deeper insight. It is, however, very difficult to take a moment to consider before we act. Before we speak, before we respond, lash out, get hurt. This is about the hardest thing in the world to practice on a moment-by-moment basis. And yet, this is a key skill on the road to personal realization and, some would hope, enlightenment. Let's expand on this. Humankind, all 7+ billion of us, we are complicated beings. What are we thinking? What are we feeling? How do we want to express our new and ever-evolving understanding of self to the world? Every single person in this room is thinking differently. Or do we want to protect ourselves, stay hidden from the world? Some would say it's much safer to be self-protecting, remain in the closet, so to speak. It is surely safer. But do we really want to play it safe? Here's the real kicker. Even though we are all human, we are all, each one of us, slightly or greatly different from one another. We can visibly see this, and yet there's no way to visibly know what another holds deep within unless they choose to share it. And sharing that part of ourselves may be the biggest risk of all. You hear it from friends and families and neighbors all the time when a crime is committed or some lascivious behavior or desire is revealed. There is shock, there is surprise, and people invariably remark that they never realized what was really within that person's soul. Here's an important note. Unless one has lived another's life, walked in their shoes, We do not have the ability to understand what they might be feeling, nor can we intuit what it might be like. We are each like a massive iceberg, not because we're cold, but because they have so much more under the surface than what one can see above the surface. Therefore, arriving at an understanding of what we might be feeling is not as quick and easy process. It takes time, it takes patience. So let us take a moment to wonder about how easy it might be to truly know oneself, not alone one another. To know and understand the intentions and what another's truth might actually be. To know the pieces that reside deep down. We may never be invited deep enough to truly know another. We may not even realize the depths that we would have to plumb, the vulnerability and secrets held within another's heart. Do we even know, admit, or accept our own deeper self? Do we go there? Truth is that when we engage with another, we are treading on holy, thin ice. A lot of ice metaphors today. Some advice: travel gently, cautiously, with care, and with permission. Many of us believe that what we see in another defines who they are. We look at someone and we think that we can fill in their story. I love doing this. Oh, that person must be from, or they must have 2.5 children, without even asking them. We apply our own experience. We believe that we can know them just by how they look, where they went to school, where they work, where they grew up and now live. We think that we can know another's story because of the color of their skin, their religion, the car that they drive, the clothes that they wear, the style and length of their hair. We think that we can know another by the way they keep their house or lawn, the size of their family, their beautiful wife or husband, their well-behaved children or not. We cannot know another by how they look and who they present to the world. We cannot know another without their consent, without their willingness to let us in. And making assumptions about someone without their permission is no less than oppression. We are forcing them to fit in based on our expectations. What we present to the world is a construct of our own design. Look to Facebook, which is a perfect example of the depth that one is willing to share. How genuine and authentic are we on social media? How deep are we willing to go with one another is directly proportional to how worried we are about the possibility of facing judgment. The biggest and most hurtful mistakes that one can make in this life is to make an assumption about a person or a group of people based on limited understanding and knowledge of the other. We do not know about immigrants or Muslims or Christians or Jews or Hindus or people of color, unless we are those things. The other, be they an individual or a group, is anyone outside of our personal range of understanding. Any guesses how far that is? Right here, within ourselves. To truly know one another requires a sense of safety and non-judgment. It requires us to let go of observable facts, realizing that what we see in another is colored by our own experiences, our own prejudices. We need to understand that what is our stuff and our expectations before we can even begin to relate to another. It takes patience and commitment to go there, to invite another in and carefully peel back the layers of one's personhood. It sounds a little painful, and it actually could be. It takes a willingness to be uncomfortable with difference, to not judge, to be respected and accepted as desperately as we ourselves want to be accepted. How many people in here want to be accepted and loved for who they are? Before first impressions, this is the part that really gets me, before those intimate conversations of getting to know one another, when experiencing another really begins is with what we may have heard about this other. Is this person a good person? A smart person? Responsible? Nice? Consistent? Are they impatient or arrogant? Radical or you name it kind of person? What have we heard? Do we form opinions based on hearsay? This or that person is a Democrat, so they must be like this, or this or that person is a Republican, therefore they must be another way. If we meet one another before we have had a burden of public opinion placed on us, in order to no longer swaying our opinions, are we more open? Are we open when we don't hear about someone before we meet them? Historically, in high society, one was introduced or vouched for before and when being introduced. We want to know someone's backstory and be assured of their genuine authenticity. But I like to give someone the benefit of the doubt, to know another for who they present to me, not how they are presented to me. It's not easy to do. Who do we project? Who are we really? And is it the same? As a spiritual person, it is my goal to constantly cultivate who I am becoming, to be vulnerable enough to authentically share me with the larger world, even though some within the world might not like who they see. They may not like my choice of tattoos, or my hair, or how I feel most comfortable dressing. They might not like my left liberal-leaning care for the other tree-hugging save-the-planet politics, but this is my way of life, and I want to live authentically. I will not be shoved back into the closet to quietly acquiesce, because I might make people uncomfortable. But in truth, most people do not ask me who I am. There are a lot of assumptions made, which, as we all know, can make an ass out of you and me. Here's my commitment to myself. I will not present myself in such a way that makes it easier for society, based on the norms to define me and stick me in a box, bless you. And I'm doing this not as a way to be difficult, but as a means to live my authenticity and maybe share some part of who I am on this journey. Please do not just see another for who you think they are. Dare to get to know who they truly are. Dare to get to know the person that we each have a right to be. It is easier to willingly accept a role of being a soccer mom with an SUV, the dutiful wife, a breadwinner, the perfect child, the radical teen, the wayward young adult, while some just don't want to be defined in such ways. To force anyone to be what we expect is an act of oppression. And expecting one person to speak for the entire race, gender, socioeconomic class, or group is ridiculous. Here's the crux of identity in a nutshell. It is a self-made, complicated construct that deserves to be honored as presented by each one of us. Those among us who dare to live and love outside of societal norms are feared, hated, judged, are instructed to seek therapy and given recommendations and guidance about how to be present and to be accepted in this world. We, they, dare live in neighborhoods that we know that we are only tolerated in. We bring those whom we love to events, even though we know that people will judge. We endeavor to live this life, and in truth, we seek acceptance, not advice on how to best fit in. The most important skills that we can all cultivate, the suspension of judgment, the privilege to self-identify, and to share openly who we are as a friend once shared, to let our inner freak flags fly. It is true that we have come further in this generation than we have ever before. And in large measure, I know I'm preaching to the choir. Women can be more than a mother or a spouse. Men can share their feelings openly. Be a stay-at-home dad. Queers of all kinds are sharing who they really are. People of color are being seen. Black lives matter, but are still feared, still marginalized. Something as simple as skin pigment and hair cannot define a person. I can grow my hair out. I can hide my agendered self in clothes that conform, but the color of one's skin is a defining characteristic that cannot be hidden away. We cannot choose the color of our skin, the texture of our hair, the place of our birth, or our first language, those things we inherit. These are the birthright attributes that define us from day one in society. I think of Bailey Prince's story for all ages last week by Dr. Seuss about the Sneetches who have stars on thars, and those who were deemed less than because they didn't have stars, and the ensuing battle that occurred afterward of trying to be accepted. What is the lesson held within the story? We seem different because of one thing or another, but if we look beyond our differences, our stars, so to speak, and get to know one another, we may be pleasantly surprised. As we enter in this most holy of weeks for both the Christians and the Jews who will be celebrating Passover, Let us imagine a young rabbi on a journey to authentically share himself, his hopes, his dreams, his beliefs, and love with the world. He was welcomed, seen as a liberator by some and a radical by others. He was given the title of Messiah by many, title he did not claim for himself. He was challenged, feared, persecuted, and put to death. What was his crime? Being open, vulnerable, willing to speak the truth about love, peace, and acceptance to power. Albert Schweitzer, a 20th century theologian and missionary, suggested that there will never be one answer to that question about Jesus' authenticity, if he really existed historically. Schweitzer said that looking for Jesus in history is like looking down a well. You see only your own reflection. The real Jesus, Schweitzer says, will remain a stranger and an enigma, someone who is always ahead of us. Maybe that is who we all really are, a stranger and an enigma to ourselves and others. Know thyself, live authentically, and be not afraid to set yourself free. We may not always be accepted or warmly welcomed, but living authentically is oh so much more rewarding. As we progress through this most holy of weeks, let us all bask in the coming light and hope of Easter, a time of renewal, a time of rebirth, and a time of revelation. Let us take a moment in silent meditation. May it be so. Amen.